Yeah, I'd like to talk today about work that we've been doing on the development and evaluation of a program to modify school district policy with regard to sun protection. This work was funded by the National Cancer Institute, so we want to thank NCI for their support of the project. Dave Buller is the PI on that particular grant and leads the project. Dave would very much like to have been here today, but he had to be at the mHealth Summit in Washington. So I'm giving the presentation today. We also have Mary Buller and Kim Massey, who are here, and Jia Liu, all from the project, so glad that they could be here as well. And I also want to recognize Jeff Ashley, who's a dermatologist who works closely with us on the project. And Jeff has been really instrumental providing that expertise, and also his many contacts in the medical community, and also a lot of the advocacy work that he's done over the years has really assisted the project as well. Just a little bit of introduction, some background, but I'll keep that brief. It's well established that sun exposure is related to increased risk for skin cancer later in life. I think it's also well established that we get a large percentage of our exposure to the sun, to UV radiation in childhood. Schools provide a good forum, we think, for the conduct of skin cancer prevention and sun protection activity for a number of reasons. One is that kids clearly get exposure during the day during peak UV hours at school. But schools also provide a forum for modification of the built environment to shield kids from UV. They provide an opportunity to intervene directly with the kids to change psychosocial factors that might lead to sun protection behavior outside of the school system. They provide an access point to parents through the school. It also provides an opportunity to work directly with staff in the school system to modify their risk behavior and also so they can model the behavior for the kids. So there are a lot of advantages for working through the schools to affect sun protection efforts. There have been a number of guidance documents that have been published. Maybe chief among these is a guidance document from CDC about how to develop sun protection programs for the schools, including policy. There have been others. The NASB, National Association for State Departments of Health, have also published a guidance document. Despite this guidance, there are relatively few school districts that have anything approaching a comprehensive sun protection policy on the books. Let me talk a little bit about the program that we've developed, SunSafe Schools program. Again, it was developed to foster adoption of SunSafe policy, sun protection policy, by school districts. It had three main components. The first was an in-person meeting. So once a school district was recruited and a key contact person was identified, usually beginning with the school superintendent, if not the superintendent, someone they would recommend, and if not that person, we worked through a number of strategies to identify key contacts within the district. Once we had identified a key contact, our staff would go meet with that person, talk to them about the importance of skin cancer prevention, about the need to affect policy change, about barriers to policy change, and work with them toward development of a policy, building motivation, instilling skills, and giving them tools. One of the tools that they did provide was a program binder, which was relatively lengthy, but it included these guidance documents that I mentioned from CDC and NASB. It provided sample policies that they could use to craft and include and propose to their school board for inclusion in their permanent policy documents. Included background information, again, about the need for skin cancer prevention and other resources that they could utilize once our intervention personnel left. They could work on the policy over an extended period of time. In addition, there was a website developed which had some of that same material, but in addition took advantage of the fact that it was a website. I mean, it provided ready access at any time, any of these key district personnel could access the website, become educated about skin cancer and sun protection and policy that could be affected toward preventing skin cancer. And it also harnessed a few things that couldn't really be put into the binder. For example, there was an interactive policy development tool, which is really kind of cool, because you could bring up windows with a sample policy in each particular area, say protective clothing, scheduling outdoor activities so that they're not occurring during peak UV exposure time during the day, present a sample of this policy, and the person who was working on that could craft it and then, you know, save it. And at the end of that tutorial, they would have a policy developed that they could propose. And there were a few additional activities that were done by way of follow-up. We tried to keep in fairly continuous contact with people. Once we'd met with them, once we'd given them the binder, some of those were just reminders, how are you doing? Is there anything we can do to help you affect policy change? We also had some more systematic tools that we distributed. There was a newsletter that went out every couple of months that would usually revolve around a particular sun safety topic, and again would provide a bit of a prompt or a cue to action for people to start to develop policy documents. We would visit, sometimes those visits just were drop-in visits. We had an activity that we did twice, once during the summer before 4th of July, and then also late in the fall term to try. Well, what we did was we showed up at the school district with gifts. We had some, one was a bucket and the other was a firecracker, they called it. And they, what they were gifts that were linked to sun safety, like some sunscreen and some lip balm. Some materials about changing policy and also about our program. And we would give that to somebody in the school system at the district level. And, you know, that was a cue to action. It was also a prompt, again, for us to be able to meet with them. And then there was a final intervention component that we tried toward the end, particularly with school districts that hadn't done much to change. Based on our interactions with them, they were not moving very quickly toward adopting policy. So we had Jeff in the California site and a pediatrician in the Colorado site who went and spoke at school board meetings. Most school boards have an open comment period. They would talk about the need for skin cancer prevention, talk about our program. Now, that may have been the final step in producing some change in policy for some districts, but at least we felt that in many cases it started a dialogue. So there may have been change even that resulted from some of those visits after we did our post-test. This is a picture of Rachel, who's one of the people who worked on the project, delivering the bucket. I think this is the one that went out in the winter and had the gifts and the information in it. Shows you a picture of the binder with all the associated materials about the program, about the need for skin cancer prevention. Here's a screenshot of the website, which I've described. Well, let me talk now a bit about evaluation, and then I'll tell you something about the findings, the outcomes. It was a randomized controlled design, so we recruited districts from Southern California and from Colorado. And Southern California was within a 100-mile radius of downtown Los Angeles, and Colorado within a 200-mile radius of Denver. Those 112 recruited districts were randomized to intervention or control. We then did pre-policy coding at baseline before randomization and then again 2 years later. It's a fairly lengthy intervention period because policy can take a good long time to change and to implement. The control group received many of the same factual materials that the intervention group received. So they received the guidance documents, a lot of the information about the need to affect change in policy and to prevent skin cancer among school children and to instill these behaviors among them. So what we can then compare is the factual information in large measure against these other intervention activities, the visit, the website, the binder. This map just shows you the Southern California sample of school districts and where they're located. You can see that we had, you know, pretty good representation from four counties: San Bernardino, Los Angeles, Ventura, and Orange County, again, all within a 100-mile radius of downtown Los Angeles. This is a map for Colorado. I know you can't read those county names, but it shows you, the star shows you Denver. You can see that we've got good representation from the eastern districts out on the plains, as well as the Front Range, and even maybe over on the other side of the Front Range. The school systems, the districts that participated in California and Colorado, were in many respects similar, but they did differ in some important ways. I mean, California was clearly the larger school systems, both in terms of numbers of students and numbers of staff. We had a much higher representation of white Caucasian students in Colorado versus California. I think it's worth noting that about 40%, both in California and Colorado, were kids that were served by free and reduced lunch. So there was a good low-income representation in our sample. Our primary measure, first of all, was actually the written policy documents. That's what we coded. We restricted it to the district board policy because we want to have an anchor point. There are many, many documents generated by the school system. Some of those guide practice in the schools and in the district. But again, to have an anchor point, we use district board policy. It also would have been very, very difficult to gather all those operating procedure documents. We created an instrument that measured whether or not policy was present in a series of content areas. I'll show you that in just a minute. Those are guided largely by the CDC document, included things like protective clothing, you know, whether or not education was being delivered for students and teachers, et cetera. So 10 of those content areas were represented. Then we coded those on three dimensions. One, was the content present, yes, no? What was the strength of it? Was it not allowed, allowed, or required? And also, for a few of these categories, there could be information about the content, but not specifically focused on sun safety. So for three of those, we had an intent category that we coded. And we monitored inter-rater reliability pretty carefully, both in the development of the instrument and then on an ongoing basis. I think we were at about 20% of the policies we would double code, so we could ensure that there wasn't drift in the quality of the coding that was occurring. This shows you the instrument. You can see the 10 categories: sunscreen use, protective clothing, hats, education for students and teachers, outdoor shade, scheduling, parent outreach, resource allocation, then accountability. Do they have a set point in time when they monitor this policy and be sure that it was being delivered? I'll move through this quickly because I'm almost out of time. This just shows a clothing policy that really wasn't oriented towards sun safety. So it talks about appropriate clothing, cleanliness, etc., but nothing really about sun safety as content. This is a much smaller fragment, but we would find these kinds of fragments in school districts that adopted policy, where it specifically states that sun protection is a part of their clothing policy. That's part of why they want this to happen, and it includes, you know, long sleeve shirts and hats, et cetera. Okay, we were able to get policies from virtually all districts. There were only six that didn't provide policies of both pretest and post-test. So we're in pretty good shape there. And let me talk a little bit about the findings. Our first analysis for outcome looked at simply whether or not any positive change occurred in a district, whether intervention or control. We compared intervention and controls for this positive change. And what we see is that the pattern is as you would predict based on the content of the intervention, but wasn't quite statistically significant, so we really can't conclude from this analysis that the program was effective. We also tested with logistic regression whether or not there was a state by intervention interaction, and there's a reason to believe there might be, because the state of California had slightly different laws that pertain to sun safety and policy in school districts than did Colorado. Colorado also had a lot more autonomy at the district level than California, but that in fact the state did not moderate treatment effects in our analysis. Then we looked at the scale scores, so a more continuous outcome measure with analysis of covariance. And here we do begin to see significant effects merging. The total score was significant, favoring the intervention, as well as the content score and the strength score. All three of those indicate a significant program, controlling for some important covariates like percentage of Caucasian students and percentage on free and reduced lunch. This is just a subscore analysis. You see that most of the effects that, the subscore, the subcontent areas that were significant is probably a better way to say it. Clearly sunscreen use, outdoor shade, and parent outreach was a marginal effect in this more exploratory analysis. So a few quick conclusions. There is some evidence that this program is effective, so outside agents can come in, work with the school district, and produce change in policy. Sunscreen, it's not surprising we got effects with that. It's usually the first thing people think of, and they're ready, I think, to make changes on sunscreen. Shade's very encouraging because that requires change in hardscape and potentially more cost. So this maybe reflects some genuine, really strong commitment on the part of the districts. And also communication with parents fits how I think most school districts see their mission to really reach out to parents. And this in some ways multiplies the effect of sun protection intervention. Let me just note two potential limitations here. One is that this work was done entirely in public schools. We don't know how this would work in private schools. In some areas like California, there are quite a lot of those. And then we, as I mentioned earlier, we didn't get at these operating documents, these standard operating procedure documents, like all the additional memos, et cetera, that would be written. So we may have actually underestimated the effects of the intervention because it's beyond the scope of our study to be able to gather and code all those standard operating documents. And I'll just note, we think we might have a potentially effective tool, change school district policy. And that's it.